Hi, Dan.
Hi, Jason.
Yeah, happy iPhone Day.
Happy iPhone Day, as usual. I have no iPhone.
Is this traditional?
Well, this is traditional because I'm the UPS route around here is always super late for me. I don't know why, but like that's the iPhone is always on the late truck coming to my house, or at least has been for many years. So I pretty much never have one until late afternoon. We'll see. You never know. Hope springs eternal, I guess. But I did. In finest tradition, I received my iPhone case. Yesterday.
Oh. That is like, how do you know that it's iPhone season? Is you get the case and you can sit there and you can open it up and look at the shape that your iPhone will take when it is inserted inside later when it arrives.
I did this and I looked at it and I'd ordered it from Amazon because I generally get a clear case because I like showing off the color a little bit, but I'm just not ready to go caseless. And then I happened to glance at the case and was like, oh no, Jason, I bought a Pro Max size case.
Oh no.
So I quickly, you know, made an Amazon return. I've still got the case, but like I'll have to order a new one.
Yeah. Oh well.
Alas.
Julian, because he's got his college iPhone coming, he got his case the other day and I gave it to him. And it was very much one of those like, now you are a man, my son, you've gotten a case before your new iPhone arrives.
Today, yes, you are.
Yeah, this is how we do it in this tribe, is you get the iPhone 4 days in advance of the actual thing. Big day today. It is as we record this, the Relay FM podcast-a-thon is coming up.
Mm-hmm.
So stjude.org/relay to donate to St. Jude. We highly recommend that everybody do
Indeed.
That if you haven't already. And if you have already, frankly.
Yeah.
It's my wife's birthday. Happy birthday, Lauren. She doesn't listen to this podcast. Actually, it's not true. She listens to this podcast. She just listens to half of it. That's right. And a little trivia for you. It's the 8th anniversary of Six Colors.
Hey, you know, that's funny. Tomorrow is the 8th anniversary of The Rebound. So
it's like something
weirdly
happened
enough.
eight years ago that, Yep. So we've been doing this for 8 years out on our own, Dan.
Does not feel like it. I got to be honest. You say 8 years and that seems like a long time. And then I'm like, it doesn't seem like 8 years. Also, you know, this is obviously different for me than for you. But I was doing an interview yesterday on a podcast and they're asking me about my history and stuff. And I also have that moment where I'm like, Jason, I was only at Macworld for 7 years.
What?
Yeah, right?
You mean you've been working for Six Colors longer than you worked for Macworld?
Correct.
I love it. I love it.
Maybe not if you include my Mac user freelance. But we're closing in. That was only a year more, so like it really is.
So we're about there
when
now.
We hit 9 years, 100%.
Let's just say that 100%. Since you've been part of the Six Colors empire, there have been way fewer layoffs, way fewer management changes.
That's true.
Slightly fewer CMS changes.
Fewer, advertising changes on the site.
Sure.
Yeah.
I got some news for you. I'm going to just put ad links under every other word randomly.
Did you consider auto-playing our video?
That's a good idea.
We should
auto-play all videos on all pages, not just the pages the videos are on, but on pages they're not on.
Anyway, in a little like thumbnail.
That statement sounded absurd. It's totally what happened. Auto-playing videos on pages they're not on sounds like this like supervillain kind of thing. That would be it was done.
My favorite thing about this is all inside baseball, but my favorite thing about that era was that we, the editors, literally compiled a giant Google Doc.
Oh yeah,
all the people who complained to us about
more than 100 pages worth,
and they ignored it.
Yeah, I got to deliver
that
one.
Hilarious. Yep. And did you print it out in a stack? Because I feel like that would be fun to like slap that down on the table.
I don't
waste
I
a
might
paper,
have,
perhaps. But.
I might have. But yeah, they were like, yeah, but we are going to show video revenue by autoplaying video on irrelevant pages that nobody's watching just so that we can say we got video views. Anyway, we thank you, dear members who are listening to this, because you're one of the reasons why we're able to do this and not have autoplay videos on the site, because people give us some money to support us to allow us to do our jobs And
it's lovely. Yeah. It really is nice.
These days, you know, our jobs is defined very differently. Like your I mean, you do your post at the end of the year, which is very, or beginning of the next year, which is very helpful. But because you have multiple jobs, right? You've got job as Six Colors guy. You've got job as Macworld columnist. You've got job as podcaster with Clockwise and The Rebound. And you've got a science fiction novelist, thriller, Cold War novelist job.
Yeah.
You wear many hats.
I do. And it's funny because people ask me how I have that much, you know, like, how do I balance all this? How do I have the time to do all of it? And the answer is I still feel like I could always be doing more. And that is like such a weird trap to be in. It's like, but there's all this time I'm not doing things. And then I sit back and realize I'm still doing a lot of things, but it feels, because I enjoy everything I do, and this is not always the case, and like, I'm not suggesting like, oh, you need to love the things you do, but because I generally enjoy all the stuff I do, it doesn't feel like I am always working. It's so aligned with stuff that I would be doing anyway, like messing around with technology, talking about pop culture, writing books, like all that stuff was stuff I was going to be doing anyways, but it's nice to be able to, you know, cobble together some degree of livelihood from it.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even mention, like, Incomparable Podcaster is another job. Right. It doesn't pay very well, but it pays a little bit.
Yeah, it pays better than, not too bad, actually.
But, yeah. For something that you would expect would not pay anything, it actually pays okay. Again, thanks to the member support over there.
It is weird, I think, for probably both of us, if you went back in time to your younger self and they're like, oh, so, like, what do you do for a job now? It's like, yeah, this isn't like, I can't give you like a one word answer to what my job is, right? Like, whereas I feel like in our, you know, certainly in our parents, perhaps, generation, like that was a descriptor, right? Like my parents were librarians. It's a one word job title, right? Like, you know.
My dad was an orthodontist. My mom was a nurse. That's it.
Yeah, exactly.
And what are you? My short version actually is some version of journalist. But then if I'm allowed to use more than one word, which on most occasions I am, it ends up being more like, well, I'm a technology journalist, but I really make stuff on the internet. I have a blog and I have podcasts and it's a whole thing in my garage. Like it ends up becoming like, look, it's a big blob of stuff that I do, but technology journalism covers most of it.
Yeah. I just go with writer. And then if people ask questions, I like, all right, I can explain further if you are now interested, but I don't want to like bore you with this.
Right. Yeah. So it's amazing that 8 years on, this is a way that we support ourselves,
but it's great.
And it is, and a lot of that is due to the support from members, which is about 7 years on.
Yeah.
So thank you. But I think I waited about a year before I asked for money from people just to show that we could do it.
Yep.
It's hard to believe that it's been that long and that we've been doing it like this. But it was the first, it was that iPhone 6, right? It was the first big iPhone. And the Apple Watch was announced, but not released yet. 8 years ago.
Right, exactly. Yeah, so that was because it was right, as people remember, it was right after the Apple Watch announcement event.
Yes, yes. Come out to the coast. We'll get together and watch an Apple event.
Oh, half a few laughs.
And then we'll lay you off.
Yeah. Yep. Some people have more laughs than others. Mm. But it was nice. I mean, I don't know. My favorite story that I tell about that time. You know, we've talked about the Clockwise thing before, where we took Clockwise.
Oh, yeah. In the dark of night. One executive nodded silently. The other executive seethed later.
Yeah. And I had a moment, too, where I was working on, like, that morning, I was, like, working on a piece. And, like, I got called to the all-hands meeting where I got laid off. And I went back. And I copied it out of the CMS and told my boss, I'm not publishing that piece.
Yeah, not doing that one.
I think that was the first thing that then got published on Six Colors by me. Was I'm like, Jason, I've got this thing.
I've got a piece ready.
Here you go.
Dan, I've got a blog all ready to go.
Excellent. Let's rock and roll.
On the Monday, I think. That was bad timing. I mean, they wanted to do it during the Apple event. I'm like,
hilarious.
No.
What, like a process server showing up while we're sitting in those seats?
Yeah, like, I was going to, like, am I going to just tap people on the shoulder and say, okay, a bunch of people got laid off. If I tap you on the shoulder, it's you. You know, Phil, it's you. Frakes, it's you. Morin, it's you.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Well, that would be an interesting experience. It's like the worst version of Duck, Duck, Goose ever.
Not you, Serenity and Chris. You were going to have to quit.
Yeah. What a time.
Anyway, we made it.
Anyway, we made it. We're here. We're great. Everything's fantastic.
I do think about that every iPhone season, though, right? Because that was when this happened. And that was, as I know I've said on other podcasts, I really wanted to take some time off. But literally, the gap between leaving Macworld and starting Six Colors was the NDA, the embargo on the iPhone 6. And I couldn't, like, if you're going to launch your own website, doing it as part of the embargo drop of iPhone reviews is the time to do it. So I'm like, all right, I guess I'm unemployed for a weekend while writing an iPhone review.
I had the other experience of being like mostly unemployed for like several months because I had like some severance payment. Not like severance, but you know.
So that you know.
That's true. And I had like some I don't want to say terrible jobs in the interim, but like I did some writing for a
popular science website,
and I decided this is not for me. I don't want to go back to this world that I just got summarily dismissed from. It felt very much like that, and it wasn't great. And the structure of it wasn't working for me.
It was a blogging grind kind of thing.
It was terrible. Like that took me back to like, oh god, I'm back to where I was like 8 years ago, and I was like, I don't want to go back to that. That feels like a step in the wrong direction. So
here we are. I've been using the iPhone Pro, iPhone 14 Pro. Mm-hmm. I transferred my eSIM that it turns out I already had as a part of the transfer process from my iPhone 13 mini to the iPhone 14 Pro review unit from Apple in space black, which is black around the edges and gray on the backside, basically. We did a video people can watch if you've got if you want to see us answer some questions and show the hardware. We did a YouTube video yesterday. Still getting used to the size and the weight, and I realized that a lot of that is me, right? I was reading John Gruber's review today, and he talked about how much he liked the mini, but that he ended up with a larger phone, and then you know, but the weight between them is so different. I'm really looking forward. I know this is skipping ahead, but I'm really looking forward to next year because I want to see what Apple's take on the iPhone is if they actually sort of like iterate on the design, because we've had 3 years of the same design, the design choices. And I felt all along that, like, and again, I'm not saying that that people can't like the Pro models and people can't like how they look, but I feel like they went hard for the low-end models to be fun and the high-end models to be not fun with their choices of having the glossy back on the low-end models and the matte back on the high-end models. And then adding to that is their color choices, although I'm not entirely sure their color choices aren't in part dictated by that original choice, that maybe they actually tried to do a brightly colored iPhone Pro and found out that it was not a good idea. Yeah. Hey, this is fun because it's live. Somebody just knocked on my door. Hold on.
I'll vamp for a while Jason answers his door. I thought the thing that was interesting in Gruber's review, and we'll talk about this when he comes back, is a suggestion that maybe they should move to titanium instead of stainless steel for the iPhone Pro because of it would make it so much lighter.
Live but listeners
I think
what's
interesting,
it.
There we go. I was vamping and talking about the iPhone Pro and Gruber's suggestion that it move to titanium instead of stainless steel for the case.
Sure.
Which I think is a great idea. The one challenge with it, as they learned in the era of the PowerBook G4, is that titanium does not really hold paint. Like, you can't really color. There's not really a good currently technology to, like, imbue it with colors, which is why if you look at the Apple Watch Ultra, silver, which has a titanium case,
you get silver or black, basically. I have a titanium watch and it's black, but there's limited stuff you can
exactly.
do.
Exactly.
So not an easy anodization process like there is with aluminum.
But I don't know. I'm feeling like as a trade-off, I would be okay having a titanium, like the frame being titanium for that lower weight without, you know, and sacrifice whatever color sheen you get with it, because I don't know. I find the shininess, honestly, of the stainless steel distracting, if anything, which is, yeah. even though it's mainly in a case. So.
And my point is, I mean, not that we're going to design the new iPhone here, although I expect, like, within the week to get a supply chain rumor about what the new iPhones are going to be, right? Because that inevitably happens. But just to point out that they made some choices 3 years ago, or, you know, in the run-up, in the design phase of what released 3 years ago, or 2 years ago, three iPhones ago, that they've had to kind of live with. And I don't know whether there are people inside Apple who would admit that their color palettes are on the Pro phones are limited. I thought their restraint on the color palettes on the non-Pro phones this year is interesting. And I'm kind of suspicious it's because they don't want to make the low-end phone look so much more fun by comparison, honestly. Right.
Yeah, I think that's probably part of it. I mean, and I think that's a shame because overall, it would be great to see Apple embrace. I think the stuff they did with colors in the last couple of years was a breath of fresh air. And it's the same thing I complain about on the Mac side, right? Like the iMac, I love those colors that they did with the new iMac. I think it looks great. They've shown resistance to doing that anywhere else.
Yeah, I know.
Except for the iMac, which feels like such a weird choice. Like, why just that computer, right? Like, if you want to do your consumer line that way, fine, but why isn't the MacBook consumer line like that? Yeah.
And I know the counter argument is a very brightly colored laptop is not necessarily something a lot of people want, or at least that seems to be the lesson of the original iBook. But one, and this goes for the Pro line too, one, we're not saying make everyone that way. We're saying give people choices. Now, it may be that the reality of that iMac is that everybody bought silver and nobody bought the other colors, and they're going to never do it again.
The problem is SKU management, too, is a issue if you're like, well, how many colors of various things you got to figure out, demand, et cetera. So, yeah.
And they chose lots, but they could choose fewer. And that's ultimately my complaint is that I like the idea of a brightly colored iPhone, and that's why I bought last year's blue, which looks great. And I would love to consider an iPhone Pro in the future. I would really like it if they made one of them more interesting. And I was laughing because Amy Gruber was on Twitter yesterday as John was finishing his review, and she just was ranting about the deep purple iPhone Pro. And she's like, it's gray. And I loved it because that's exactly what I said. I got to see one outside where somebody for an Apple employee took one out of their pocket while I was at Apple Park, and so bright sunlight, and I just said, oh, it's gray. Like, oh, it's gray. So it isn't. It's purple. People on the stream video stream yesterday saw it is purple, but it's one of those, like, you gotta look purples. It's a subtle, and you know, I'm not saying that some people want subtle. I'm saying that some people don't want subtle, and Apple isn't providing anything for them. So I'm just, my larger point here, because I've been talking about this for the last 2 years, right, this color issue, is they have an opportunity next time to make materials decisions for the iPhone that are different that might lead to them having a bigger color palette to play with. I wonder if they will do that. I don't know.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, I would certainly like to see them play a little bit more with it. It's something that has always been very iconic for Apple, is all the colors, going back to the most famous logo. So
yes.
I would love to see them embrace that as well. But I guess, yeah, we'll see what happens next year, I suppose.
All the pedants were about to compose that email about the tree with the apple logo.
I caught myself.
Not the original. The classic, I always refer to it as the classic Apple rainbow logo because it's not the original, but it is the classic. By the way, so normally I don't broadcast the interruptions during our recording session, even if we are live streaming them. If you're a More Colors or Backstage level member, you can listen to us live doing things like opening the door for a delivery. But in this case, I'm going to make an exception because my son's iPhone has arrived. I'm expecting my review unit of the Apple Watch Series 8, which I got to be honest, I'm not super excited about because it's not that different from my Series 7 Apple Watch. I'm much more interested in the Apple Watch Ultra that is not ready yet. But I missed the delivery yesterday. I don't know how. I think I was brushing my teeth and the guy came and knocked on the door once very quickly and then ran away.
Run away.
But yeah, I'm surprised here before 9 a.m. the iPhone has arrived. Also, review units get a knock on the door and you must sign. Just regular old iPhones, they just dumped it at the door. Knocked on the door, dumped it, ran away.
They used to always require a signature, which always frustrated me because it's like, I got to make sure I'm here.
Yeah, pandemic, sure I guess.
Yeah, who wants
the anymore? Yeah, oh, and it is UPS and the review units come via FedEx. So that's the difference there.
I do think I had to sign for my studio display when it showed up.
Oh, yeah. Well, yeah, that's high enough value and big enough
and
box,
it's giant,
right?
Giant box, yeah.
So. I'm still playing with the Dynamic Island. I'm really looking forward to the third-party apps supporting it, and they only just got the APIs, and I think maybe they can do it in the betas now. That third-party developers can do it, because that's the thing that I'm very curious about, is that whole Live Actions API and what that looks like and how that works with the Dynamic Island, because that feels much more to me like a right, like audio playback makes sense, and I like the Dynamic Island. I think it's really clever. But I really want to see a third-party implementation for something like a sports score or something like that, because I think that would be a lot of fun. Because that's almost like that's me saying, can you put this information up here in the top and let it, you know, let it stay there, you know, that I want to see, as opposed to, yeah, I'm playing your music, right? Which is nice. Don't get me wrong, it's nice, but it's not quite the same as like information on demand of like I'm actually putting an information block up in the Dynamic Island saying, show me the sports score.
Yeah, I'm intrigued to see how people take advantage of that. I think the third party story there will be really interesting, because it is such a big shift from what we're used to seeing. We talked about this a little bit. Like, the iPhone in the past really hasn't had any manner of dealing with multitasking aside from using notifications, basically, which are, you know, they're not modal, but they're kind of equivalent to like something modal, in that they really have, you know, like, here's static information that we can display and it blocks your view of what's going on and you have to click into it to see more details and all of that. So it wasn't really designed for that in that way. I thought it was interesting in Gruber's take to point out, you know, obviously, not only is this something that is divvied up by a software unit that depends on a hardware feature, but it's an interface design that requires a certain piece of hardware, so that even though Live Activities API does work on previous iPhones, it only shows up on the lock screen, because it's the only place that you have room to show that information. So that's an interesting choice as well, because it really bifurcates sort of the experience, you know, of a newer phone. It's akin to, I think, going back to, and in some ways this isn't even as big a change, but like going back to when the iPhone 10 came out, and you know, the lack of a home button.
Oh yeah.
And the fact that you swipe up, right, and the changes the gestures for switching apps and stuff like that. So this is kind of another example of like, well, we're taking this to the next level. And it's funny to me, because there are a lot of people who are still like, I think about my wife has an iPhone 8, and it's like, she's still using a home button iPhone. Whew. And now I'm going to have like two levels of like UI that's different. So every time she wants to use my phone, she's going to be like, what is this thing? It's like, well, that's the Dynamic Island. It's an interesting departure there.
Yeah, it is. You're exactly right. It's a lot like, it's the evolution of the OS through the evolution of hardware. So the 10 brought those new gestures and those new concepts, and they've gradually gone everywhere. And I think that on the iPhone, that's what's going to happen with the Dynamic Island. Gruber thinks it's going to be a little while before it moves down. I'm not entirely convinced that it'll be that long. But it is a differentiator, and it does change the interface. I mean, we all kind of applauded the Live Activities API at WWDC, right? The idea that instead of having notifications sitting on your lock screen, it would be live information. Like, that's still a nice feature, but with a Dynamic Island, it's like, it's also on your screen all the time. I was like, oh, well, that's different. And you don't get that. But, you know, in a year or two or three, I'm sure that'll just be the standard, just as other than diehards like your wife, the home button is just fading away.
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that'll be interesting. I was just working on my Macworld piece for next week, so here's your preview.
Oh, nice.
But thinking about the evolution of the iPad, the low-end iPad, right, which is the last iPad with a home button.
Right.
And you're thinking there, because sitting there going, man, there's a... We've talked about this before. Apple loves reusing hardware, especially old hardware, in its lower margin products because it's cheaper, right? They go, oh, we've built that iPhone 8 chassis for literally years. We can just keep using that. But at a certain point, you also think to yourself, well, if you've switched all your other product lines over to this different design and you're maintaining an old product line to just because you can make it more cheaply, at some point, does that become more expensive because you've got these dedicated things, you know, product lines to creating stuff that you only use for a couple products, right? I can't think that Apple is selling so many iPhone SEs compared to 12s, 13s, 14s, right, et cetera, that it's cost efficient at a certain point to keep making an iPhone SE that has a home button. Similarly with the iPad, right? If you're producing the Air and the Pro, which basically use roughly the same chassis, you throw the Mini in there as well, even though it's smaller, does it still make sense to produce an older iPad with a home button? Or is it smart to at some point just say like, hey, we just use the same chassis design for all of these things and we can use the same, you know, factory lines to basically produce them.
Right.
So I think that that writing is on the wall.
I was going to say it was a crossover point, but it's not quite that. It's the when you introduce something new, it's expensive, but it's in an expensive product. It's after the crossover point. It's when it gets to the point where now you've reached the part of the cycle where it's like, well, why are we still making this?
Right. Because we're holding on to the legacy.
Right.
Nodes.
It made sense when we had them all up and running and they were feeding a portion of our products. But there is a point where that number gets so small that you've got to shut it off.
Exactly. And you're just doing it for a low margin product, which is the worst part of all, because it's like, well, we're not even making that much money off that comparatively. Like, would it be cheaper to just make everything standard and then essentially...
Right. These new parts are now cheaper because we've been making them for a while.
We've been making tons of them. Yeah, so I think it's only a matter of when for both the SE and the iPad that they will switch over to a home. Plus, maintaining old interactions is a pain, right? Like, you don't want to have to have your support documents to be like, so if you're on this device, do this to like restart your phone or like swipe over. But if you're on these devices, and this is how you check and see which device you're on, I don't know. I think that just, it confuses things. And I think Apple would prefer to have a cleaner experience of saying like, this is how our devices work.
Yeah.
So whenever, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Just to make it more consistent and clearing out the home button after 5 years. It's been 5 years since the iPhone X.
Right. Yeah. I mean, that's a long time to maintain those old designs for. I can't imagine that Apple wants to get to like 10 years. We still got a phone with the home button in there.
No, it's got to go. And the rumors are that the new SE is going to be based on the XR, right? That it's going to be a little bit larger and it's going to be LCD possibly, but with a Face ID and a notch. So,
yeah. So like, and that's where you save the money, right? Is like, let's use a less expensive display panel. Let's not put in necessarily all our best tech, etc. You know, like there's a lot of that aspect. Like, you know, the same way with the iPad, right? The base level iPad, the iPad Air has given us a template in some ways because you can do that design and still use Touch ID instead of Face ID by having it in the sleep button. Like, you know, I think they want compatibility with a lot of their, you know, products. Like, hey, we want the Apple Pencil 2 to work on all of our iPads. We want the Magic Keyboard potentially to work on all of our iPads, right? Like, all of those things are potentially ways for Apple to goose sales a little bit by saying like, yeah, this isn't where we're going to draw the dividing line, right? Like, this isn't where we're drawing the line of, well, you know, you have to pay for a more expensive product to get these features. We want to make that accessible in low margin device, but still, you know, have dividing lines by saying, well, it doesn't have the latest and greatest display. It doesn't have, you know, the best chip necessarily. I think all of that makes a lot of sense.
Your big grand return to the website in an iOS 16 review happened on Monday. Any big takeaways you want to talk about from that review? Things that really stuck out for you?
I think it's an interesting choice for an update this year. It's one of those things where when I dug down into it more, it felt like there's a lot of small improvements. And, you know, setting aside sort of the lock screen, which I think is obviously front and center, it's a big rethink of a major part of the phone that we all interact with every day. A lot of the updates are kind of a little bit more modest, or things that are going to take a little bit more time to actually work their way into usage. So, you know, I think of stuff like passkeys, which are still only slowly rolling out. implementation across various websites is very different. I have been setting up passkeys in a couple places where I can find them, and it's wildly different depending on what sites you use. So that's going to be an issue that has to be overcome with that, is just getting people to start understanding and using that. And then likewise, there's a lot of features that got pushed off, right? iCloud shared photo library is a big feature, I would argue, but it's not coming till 16.1, unless you already enabled it on the beta, in which case you still have it. So
if then, right? I mean, I think we all assume it will, but you don't actually know.
That's true. Yeah.
They have the ability to keep pushing things back if they're not ready.
It seemed pretty solid to me. I wondered if some of it was because they wanted to wait for iPad OS 16 to come out and Ventura to come out, because when you roll across, like when you roll out new iPhoto, like Photos improvements, you kind of want all your devices to get it.
Yeah, if you've got a device on the old OS, you literally can't see anything that's been pushed into the shared library.
Exactly.
It's not good. So you need to have it there.
Yeah, so I think that's one big reason that they're probably waiting, because otherwise, I don't know, my brief usage with it, and I have been putting stuff in a shared library even though I share it with nobody, is that it works pretty well.
Yeah, my big concern, it sounds like it's a bug, is that it isn't detecting duplicates properly.
Yes, yeah.
And that's not great. But yeah, I think it's coming.
Yeah.
Does it feel weird to So some of the banner features of iOS 16, it feels like, are features that are in the new iPhones, right? Like it's always on display and dynamic island. Those are kind of iOS 16 features but they're the ones that were held back for the new hardware, as they do sometimes.
And so, as someone who doesn't have the new hardware, I can't write about those because I don't know what they're like. I think there are a bunch of, I think this is sort of an update in which there's a lot of quote unquote quality of life improvements, and a lot of setting the stage for stuff that comes in the future. I mean, like passkeys, as I mentioned, the Apple spent a lot of time at WWC talking about the CarPlay improvements.
Yeah.
It's like that's years away, it feels like, right? Like they're laying the groundwork, but there's no cars that support that really, and nobody is running out to buy. Most people aren't running out to buy a new car, in the same way that they buy a new iPhone. So it's going to be a while before we see an impact from that, but it is sort of like telegraphing where they're heading. The other challenge with me is always with iOS reviews, and I think you probably, would agree, there's some features. I think I've used this reference before, but one of my cousins, who actually lives in the Bay Area, goes to a ton of movies, and he writes reviews of the movies every year. And it used to be back in the day, there would be smaller movies that wouldn't necessarily play at theaters in those areas. And he wouldn't review those movies because it's like, you got to play near me. Like, I can't review a movie that it isn't easy for me to go see. Less of a case nowadays. But I think about that with iOS features a lot of time, where it's like, I want to review this feature, but it's not a feature I really use. For example, focus modes. I struggle with focus modes a lot. There is some stuff in there I like. I like the predefined stuff that they've given me for things that are very specific. Sleep, fitness, driving. Like, I find all of those sort of mode switches to be very sensible and very understandable for me. When it comes to making my own focus mode for anything, I just don't. It's too much work. It's too much overhead for me to think about, like, all right, well, what am I doing with my day? Who do I really need to hear from? What apps do I really care about? It's not a thing. I think it speaks a little bit to my frustration with the fetishization of tools sometimes, where people are so interested in the tools to get things done that they get wrapped up in that rather than doing the thing they should be doing. And so focus mode sort of hits that for me. It's like, it's great if you are somebody who uses the same phone for your work and your personal life, and you can draw a really clear line between the two of those things. I can definitely understand why like focus filters and stuff like that would be hugely beneficial. But my personal and work life, as we just discussed at the top of the podcast, really bleeds over a lot. So it's rarely a time where I'm like, oh, I don't want to see my work email. It comes to the same inbox. Sorry. Like, I can't do anything about that. So I think that that feature is great for people who use it. It is not a feature that I get a lot of use out of. And so in a review, when I'm trying to like sort of evaluate and say like, I think they've done some very clever stuff. I think this is technologically a feature that is really well put together and they've made some nice changes this year. It's not going to change me from not using it probably. But that's just the way it goes.
That's always the challenge is you got to put your mind, put yourself in the mind of a user of the product even if it's not necessarily something that you do, but it is harder to do that. That's always how I feel when I write about mail every year, right? Because I don't use Apple Mail on the Mac, sure. And yet I have to have an opinion about it. So it's like, well, right, okay, I guess I'll use it for a little while. At least I use it on iOS. But it's a little bit of a challenge.
Yeah, no, I totally hear you.
All right, well, busy season continues. You're going to get an iPhone. I'm going to distribute an iPhone. I'm going to get the new Apple Watch. And, you know, more to come for sure. Big week.
Yeah.
Hope everybody out there is enjoying whatever new hardware they may have bought or is about to enjoy it. And relay.fm, no, stjude.org/relay. That's it. To donate to St. Jude. You should do that sometime this month. And thank you for supporting the site. Until next week, I guess, right? I'm taking my son to college, so we're going to have to figure out how that's going to work. But we'll figure something out. But until then,
yeah,
bye,
we'll
Dan.
Bye, Jason.